What's Universal Time? Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting in Laos, site of the 28th meeting of the Southeast Asian Nations, or ASEAN. India's Prime Minister Narendra Modi will take part Wednesday in the 14th ASEAN-India Summit and participate in Thursday's East Asia meeting in Vientiane. In a speech Tuesday, President Obama reaffirmed the long-term interests of continued U.S. engagement in the region.
America's interest in the Asia-Pacific is not new. It's not a passing fad. It reflects fundamental national interests. And in the United States, across the political spectrum, there's widespread recognition that the Asia-Pacific will become even more important in the century ahead, both to America and to the world.
Addressing hundreds in the Lao National Cultural Hall, Mr. Obama explained how deeply the U.S. has become involved in the region during his two terms in office.
We've strengthened our alliances with our new defense guidelines. Japan and the United States will do even more together to uphold regional security. We've expanded our collaboration with the Republic of Korea, including on missile defense to counter North Korean threats. With our U.S. Marines now rotating through Australia, we can respond even faster to regional challenges. And with our new access agreement with the Philippines, our militaries are closer than they've been in decades.
And he said the U.S. expects to deepen ties in economic relations, participate in environmental and terrorism issues, and re-engage with former enemies like Vietnam. European Union observers in Gabon say there was an obvious anomaly in election results that showed President Ali Bongo defeating challenger Jean Ping narrowly in the August 27 ballot. The EU mission questioned the tally in a Bongo stronghold where he won 95% of the vote from a 99% turnout when less than 50% of voters cast ballots nationwide. Official results show Mr. Bongo winning by that razor-thin margin of about 5,000 votes. The opposition has charged fraud. This is VOA News. In Syria, rescue workers and a rights group said Tuesday government helicopters dropped barrel bombs suspected of containing chlorine gas on a rebel-held neighborhood of Aleppo. First responders, known as civil defense, said dozens suffocated from fumes, but they report no fatalities. There was no immediate government reaction. Meanwhile, U.S. spokesman Mark Toner in Washington Tuesday said progress is being made in ongoing U.S.-Russian talks to halt the fighting.
We continue to feel like we're making progress and believe we're making progress on some of the remaining issues, but we're not going to settle. Given the importance of this arrangement that we're seeking and the impact of this arrangement that we're seeking, we believe it's absolutely essential that we get a clear understanding of the way forward.
The U.S. and Russia, who support opposing sides in the conflict, hope to hold a new round of talks in coming days. Meanwhile, Turkey said two of its soldiers were killed, five wounded in clashes with Islamic State militants along the northern Syria-Turkish border. In Afghanistan, the death toll reached 35, with more than 100 wounded in hours of explosions and gunfire in Kabul. Twin suicide bombings rocked the area near the defense ministry, claimed by the Taliban. A few hours later, a car bomb and gunfire near the office of the A Group Care International claimed the lives of three suspected Taliban militants. The UN Security Council Tuesday condemned North Korea's latest ballistic missile launches, threatening to take further significant measures. The council chairman, New Zealand Ambassador Gerard Van Boneman, read statements saying the launches violate previous resolutions.
The members of the Security Council deplore all the Democratic Republic of Korea's ballistic missile activities, including these launches, noting that such activities contribute to the Democratic People's Republic of Korea's development of nuclear weapons delivery systems, and they increase tension.
The North fired off three ballistic missiles, coinciding with the end of the Group of 20 economic summit in China. Myanmar's new civilian leader, Aung San Suu Kyi, is to visit the U.S. next week for the first time since her National League for Democracy won November elections. Carnegie Endowment for Peace Southeast Asia analyst Vikram Nehru said the top priority will be the status of U.S. sanctions that largely target the country's former military rulers.
I suspect that she will not ask for them to be lifted, but that she will ask for them to be eased, because she is interested in getting more U.S. investment into the country. She has to demonstrate that her policies and her government are yielding economic dividends for the people.
Some rights groups like Human Rights Watch oppose easing sanctions against Myanmar until there's evidence democratic transition is irreversible. Consolidation in the energy industry powered U.S. stocks higher Tuesday, with the tech-oriented NASDAQ Composite Index closing at an all-time high of 5,275 points. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today's Wednesday, September 7th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Somalia's president calls for more diaspora to return home and help in rebuilding the country.
Today in Mogadishu, the best hotels, the best supermarkets, the best other services that are run today here, IT services and others, are all or most of them run by young people from the diaspora, and the Somali government to encourage them.
The Somali president, Hassan Sheikh Mohamed, speaking Saturday to viewers Abdirahman Yabaro. Sea erosion displaces hundreds in one of the poorest and heavily populated boroughs of Liberia's capital. South Sudan women welcome deployment of a regional protection force, but want protection against sexual assault.
They go on another E-setting. The sister are hitting the horses there. As the way you see the land growing, how the horses then were breaking. Even down to the quarter road, I want to be relocated. And for me, I get 4 children.
Millions of Nigerian children return to school this month, but millions more may not attend because of Boko Haram. An emergency cholera vaccination campaign to start soon in the DRC, and Nigeria's tech entrepreneurs get a little help from their government. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Somalia's president, Hassan Sheikh Mohamed, says he wants more young Somalis in the diaspora to return and help rebuild the country, even as al-Shabaab militants continue to mount deadly attacks. Mohamed spoke one-on-one with VOA Somali chief Abdirahman Yabaro in Mogadishu after taking questions from Somalis in a VOA-sponsored town hall meeting on Saturday. The program was the first of its kind to connect Mogadishu with St. Paul, Minnesota, home to the largest Somali community in the United States. The president said the Somali diaspora is responsible for many of the new businesses that have taken root in the Somali capital since al-Shabaab lost its hold on the city in 2011.
I was very much astonished to see the level of willingness, the level of hope that those young people in Minneapolis have, and how they love this country, how they are committed to come back. We used it to say before, only the old people are the ones who are willing to go back, but to come back. But now we're seeing that the young generation as well is willing. Today in Mogadishu, the best hotels, the best supermarkets, the best other services that are run today here, IT services and others, are all or most of them run by young people from the diaspora. And the Somali government, to encourage them to come back, we have outsourced some of the government services to those professionals and their small companies to do. And they are doing a very good job in providing these government services to the public. I was very much astonished to see the level of willingness, the level of hope that those young people in Minneapolis have, and how they love this country, how they are committed to come back. We used it to say before, only the old people are the ones who are willing to go back, but to come back. But now we're seeing that the young generation as well is willing.
On how he plans to reduce the violence in the capital, President Mohamed said Somali security forces need to adjust to al-Shabaab's changing techniques.
It's a new phenomena to demolish the city. It's not now killing people or killing or going into hotels and government offices and killing people inside it. But now it's another technique. I'm sure the security forces will also address this type as they address it, those that were used to happen in the past.
That was Somali President Hassan Sheikh Mohamed. He spoke one-on-one with VOA Somali Service Chief Abdirahman Yabaro in Mogadishu. Women's rights activists in South Sudan say they are happy with the UN resolution to deploy a regional protection force in their country. But they say they want the force to prioritize protecting women against sexual assault and other types of violence. Demo Silva Arunlo has more from Torit in South Sudan.
Women leaders say once deployed in South Sudan, the regional protection forces should first ensure the safety of women who have witnessed and experienced ethnic-based attacks. Angelina Daniel Sika, who head the local NGO and impunity organization, says she wants guarantees that the regional peacekeepers will not rape South Sudanese women.
I really call upon this troop to come and deliver this security, and they respect our dignity as the women and children or young girls in South Sudan. Why I'm saying this? Because women are suffering a lot, especially issue of the sexual violence and all these kind of things. So I trust that they will deliver their service with dignity.
Flora Eleha, a lawmaker in the Imotong State Assembly, says foreign troops should focus primarily on protecting the rights of women and children, whom she says are particularly vulnerable to abuse in a conflict in South Sudan.
For us women, really, all everywhere all over the world, we women, we are the target, we are the suffering people. Now you go everywhere on the road, you find women with children are just going across the border, moving with food. Good, we are not happy as we women, but for their coming, we want them to come and first solve the problem of the women and children, those who are suffering. Because we are not fighting, we don't have guns, we don't have anything, but we are the one dying with our children.
Another female lawmaker and women rights activist in Imotong State, Alma Maha, says regional peacekeepers should focus on supporting peace and reconciliation efforts across the country. Speaking in Arabic, Eliha says the protection force must protect civilians from violent attacks by armed groups and even soldiers. If they come, we wish that they really be our eyes. Maha says that they should protect citizens as they have promised, without turning against the civilians. She says women welcome the coming of the foreign troops with all their hearts so that they can have peace. Linda Ferdinand is an activist with the WOW-based Women Training for Promotion organization. Ferdinand says the forces should help create an environment for the warring parties to implement the August 2015 peace agreement.
The priority first is full implementation of peace agreement. And then we need to see in practical concernment area for the conflicting parties. Here in Western Baragazal, we want to see concernment area for the IO, at least to guarantee security. And the second issue, we need this hybrid court to try those who committed crimes and violations during conflict. Before all this also, we need improvement of protection system.
The women say their hopes remain high. Their suffering will finally end. The lawmakers and activists say they hope the deployment of the regional forces will convince South Sudanese who sought refuge in neighboring countries to return home. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Torit.
Sea erosion in Liberia's capital has left thousands of people homeless and making virtually impassable the main route to the densely populated township of West Point. About 125 structures are believed to have been washed away, and as many as 6,000 people left homeless. Titi Jibro reports from Monrovia.
Shelter crisis continues to deepen by the day in the densely populated Liberian community of West Point near the sea coast of the capital, Monrovia.
As the way you see the land growing, how the horses then were breaking. Even down to the quarter road, I want to be relocated. And for me, I get 4 children.
Susan Toh is among hundreds of people made homeless as a result of sea erosion in West Point, which is home to an estimated 85,000 people, mostly impoverished Liberians. The main route into the township has been made impassable. Most of the victims have resorted to sleeping outside, and the constant downpour of rain in Monrovia and its environs has made matters worse as the number of homeless increases. Samson Nya is the local government head here in West Point. He said at present, the government does not have any short-term way out for the victims.
On a very serious note, for the last 2 to 3 days, government has not been able to provide some short-term solution for them. It's really overwhelming. Initially, we had at least 5,000 persons that we were catering to with respect to finding relocation for them. That number, close to 500 persons again got affected, and thereby carrying the number to around 6,000 persons.
Township Commissioner Nyan said the government's main plan is to relocate the affected residents in the VOA community outside Monrovia. It took the government 1 month to build 60 zinc shacks in the VOA community for the relocation plan. But those makeshift structures are even insufficient for the relocation of the over 5,000 residents of West Point who have been affected by the sea erosion. With so many made homeless and about two more months to go before the end of the rainy season, Commissioner Nyan said without the passage of the national fiscal budget, it's going to be difficult for the government to offer immediate help to the victims of the West Point sea erosion. T.T. Jibro, VOA News, Monrovia, Liberia.
Today is Wednesday, September 7th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica at voanews.com. Let's send shout-outs to listeners on our VOA affiliate stations, Buffalo FM in Monrovia, Liberia, Rush FM in Bamenda, Cameroon, Radio Hot Cocoa, also in Bamenda, Cameroon, Sky 106.6 FM in Freetown, Sierra Leone, and KISS 104 FM in Bow, Sierra Leone. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 17 minutes past the hour. French Prime Minister Manuel Valls has joined others in voicing concern over Gabon's recent disputed presidential election. During an interview on French radio on Tuesday, Valls said Gabon should hold a recount of the vote after the opposition alleged that voter fraud took place. Gabon's election commission announced last week that President Ali Bongo won the election over opposition leader Jean Ping by about 5,000 votes, leading to protests and street violence that has left at least six people dead. Gabon's Justice Minister, Seraphine Mondunga, resigned over the disputed election results of President Bongo, becoming the first high-level government official to step down since the vote. Mondunga told Radio France International on Monday that the government is not responding to concerns about the need for peace, leading him to decide to step down. Schools are set to resume this month in Nigeria, but millions of children may not attend. Nigeria has one of the world's largest populations of out-of-school children. Many cannot attend because of violence caused by the Boko Haram insurgent group in the country's northeast. As VOA's Chris Stein reports from Lagos, administrators are hoping that they can get more northeastern children back into classrooms for the new school year.
More than 2 years after Boko Haram stormed into the government secondary school in Chibok and abducted over 270 schoolgirls, construction workers are repairing the demolished buildings. The kidnapping of the schoolgirls caused a global outcry. While some of the abductees were able to escape immediately, only one has been rescued in the years since. Chibok's was not the only school to suffer at the hands of Boko Haram. Musa Inua Kubo is the education minister for Borno, the northeastern state that has borne the brunt of the seven-year-long insurgency.
More than 134 schools were destroyed by Boko Haram.
In a report released this week, the UN Children's Fund says 10.5 million children are out of school in Nigeria, or about one in every three students. The insurgency in the country's northeast has played a major role in disrupting education. 1 million students are out of the classroom because of the violence. The insurgents have made opposition to Western education a centerpiece of their ideology. They didn't only destroy schools, they killed teachers and forced over 2.7 million people to flee. UNICEF says 1,200 schools were closed because they were damaged, looted, or used to shelter displaced people. Borno State will resume classes later this month. Kubo says the state government has taken steps to open the majority of schools in the state by moving internally displaced people, known as IDPs, out of classrooms.
We have relocated these IDPs. We have renovated all the schools that the IDPs stayed in.
Not all schools will open. Kubo says 15 schools are in areas too dangerous for classes to start. UNICEF spokesman Toby Fricker says some schools will have to contend with an increase in students. Cities like the state capital Maiduguri have swollen with displaced people. But this could also offer opportunities to get children who may not have had easy access to education into classrooms.
You really have, you know, a lot of displaced people who are in towns or even in internally displaced camps, and in some cases have easier access to education because of the location. In terms of the travel to school, it's not as far.
Kubo says the state government has started rebuilding destroyed schools. The school in Chibok was damaged during the Boko Haram attack and eventually bulldozed by the government. Locals said students in the town were left without any place to study. The Nigerian Army engineers are rebuilding classrooms and dormitory blocks. Parents of the missing girl say rebuilding the school is the right move. If her missing daughter Dorcas Yakubu is rescued, Esther Yakubu says she would have no qualms about her attending classes in Chibok.
I would send her to that school, only that she cannot sleep in the school anymore.
Perhaps if her daughter wasn't staying overnight on the school grounds, Yakubu says she may not have been kidnapped. Chris Stein for VOA News, Lagos.
Young Nigerian tech entrepreneurs are getting a little help from their government. Last week, 30 of them competed for the chance to pitch their ideas directly to President Muhammadu Buhari. Chika Odua has more from Abuja.
Nigeria has a growing technology scene full of ambitious young entrepreneurs. There is Angel Adelaja.
I'm the CEO and founder of Fresh Direct Nigeria, and we are creating uncommon farmers in urban spaces using container farming. We take a 20-foot container that you would put a car in to ship, and we kit it with hydroponic farming technology, and we farm vertically, and we're growing premium produce, vegetables, cabbage, lettuce, so many different things inside the containers.
There's Ife Dayo Oludapo.
I am the founder of Grid Systems, and what we make is a web-enabled multi-source energy monitoring device. It's kind of like a utility meter, but it measures power consumption from all the different power sources you have, which is a big deal in an under-electrified environment like Nigeria.
And there's Ima Okene, CEO of Trackology. He and his team created a barcode that will be posted on people's front gates so garbage men know whether a customer has paid for their trash to be picked up.
Once the utility provider comes to the house, all he has to do is just scan this barcode and he knows in real time whether you've paid for that waste or whatever service he wants to offer you, and he renders it.
30 entrepreneurs competed last week for a chance to pitch their ideas to the Nigerian president. Three were chosen to meet the president, and Ima Okene's Trackology was one of them. He won a cash prize of more than $8,000. The Nigerian economy slid into a recession last week for the first time in more than 20 years. The global slump in oil prices has left the government strapped for cash. That is why it is supporting tech businesses that might be able to spark economic growth. Last week's pitch event kicked off with a lot of fanfare. And when the biggest tech celebrity of all showed up, Mark Zuckerberg of Facebook, flashes from cell phone cameras lit up the room.
Thank you all for having me here today. It's awesome to be here with you. It's so inspiring to see what you've built here.
Zuckerberg was ending his first trip to Nigeria. He also listened to the winning pitches from the startup owners.
You know, this trip has really blown me away by the talent of the entrepreneurs and the developers in this country, and by the focus on building something that's going to make a difference and going to make a change. I think that if you keep doing this, you're not only going to shape Nigeria and all of Africa, but the whole world.
Lagos is currently the country's tech hub, but Abuja is developing its own tech scene with public workspaces and incubators to help young people who have business ideas. If the government's hopes are realized, one of Abuja's startups may blossom into the next Facebook. Chika Odua for VOA News in Abuja, Nigeria.
The World Health Organization says it is alarmed at the quick spread of a cholera epidemic in the Democratic Republic of Congo and is taking emergency measures to halt the spread of the deadly disease. The WHO reports a cholera vaccination campaign is set to begin in the capital, Kinshasa, in a couple of weeks. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
Cholera is highly endemic in the Democratic Republic of Congo, but this year an epidemic of the disease is moving with unusual speed. The WHO estimates nearly 18,000 cases so far this year. That is practically the same number of cholera cases recorded for all of 2015. Of even greater concern is the spread of the disease from the eastern part of the country, where it is normally limited, to Kinshasa, which usually is free of cholera. The head of the WHO Department for Pandemic and Epidemic Diseases, Dominique Legault, says 2011 was the last time Kinshasa had cholera. He says that outbreak lasted almost 2 years, with more than 2,000 cases and 88 deaths. He says it is crucial to hold a vaccination campaign at the start of an epidemic, and that about 300,000 people will be inoculated.
The objective of that campaign, which is targeting the most at-risk areas of the city, which is a big city, it's about 5 million inhabitants in Kinshasa. The objective is to try to contain the outbreak and avoid that we have a similar situation like we had 5 years ago of a long outbreak with many cases and many deaths.
In the highly endemic areas in eastern DRC, the WHO reports a fatality rate of 1.3%. In western DRC, which includes Kinshasa, it reports a high fatality rate of 6%. Legault says there have been 13 cases of cholera and 2 deaths reported in Kinshasa since August 13th.
That's very worrisome because it affects places where there is usually no cases of cholera. No immunity of the population. The health staff is not used to cholera cases. And the additional concern we have for Kinshasa is that the rainy season is coming. Usually the peaks of cholera cases in DRC are starting in September, October.
Legault says the vaccination campaign will be expanded to include 2 camps sheltering refugees from Burundi and the Central African Republic who are at particular risk. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Just a listener mail for this Wednesday morning, September 7th.
According to Section 16, Subsection A, B of Nigeria 1999 Constitution as amended, it is the constitutional responsibility of the federal government of Nigeria to harness and control without prejudice the national resources so as to promote national prosperity, provide maximum welfare for citizens, and a dynamic and self-reliant economy, and not complaints here and there. Albert Alagbo, Tomobudu Katu Ranch Vegetable Ward, in Obaluku Local Government Area of Kwara State, Nigeria. Thank you.
We thank you, listener, for your comment. Our other listener mail comes from Ambrose Adjo of McCurdy in Benue State, Nigeria. He says, Dear Daybreak Africa, I call on President Muhammadu Buhari to consider seriously and urgently two calls by Nigeria's economic experts on the Nigerian leader to pump cash into the country's infrastructure development in order to help cushion the harsh effects of the prevailing deep recession on the Nigerian people. I think there can be no better time to take the bull by the horn than now. We thank you, Ambrose Adjo, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. French Prime Minister Manuel Valls has joined others in voicing concern over Gabon's recent disputed presidential election. During an interview on French radio on Tuesday, Valls said Gabon should hold a recount of the vote after opposition alleged that voter fraud took place. Gabon's election commission announced last week that President Ali Bongo won the election over opposition leader Jean Ping. And that's it for this Wednesday, September 7th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very good day.
Hello, Africa music fans. We have hours of the music that you love every day. From the north to the south and the east to the west, we play only the best. Tune in at 0100, 0200, 1200 and 1300 UTC GMT right here on VOA Africa.
Next week on Straight Talk Africa, choosing the hero, my improbable journey, and the rise of Africa's first woman president. Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, the 2012 Nobel Peace Prize winner and president of Liberia, is a subject of a new book by River Levinson, an in-depth discussion on the life and career of Ellen Johnson Sirleaf is next week, right here on Straight Talk Africa at 18:30 UTC.